Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Kenyan Wall Street Podcast. In today's startup show, we interview Dario Giuliani, who is the founder of Brighter Bridges. So Brighter Bridges is a data intelligence company operating in emerging markets or the underserved markets, as Dario likes to put it. So yeah, welcome to the podcast, Dario.
Thanks for having me here. I've known the Kenyan Wall Street for a while, so it's good to finally get in touch and have a conversation.
Awesome.
So just to give you a bit of a flavor of Brighter, Brighter was actually born as a magazine. And the idea behind Brighter was to showcase the brighter side to what we call underserved markets, which coincide pretty much with countries and economies and locations where the supply of information isn't enough or isn't adequate enough to actually showcase what the opportunities are that lie into these geographies, right? And this applies to, you know, business, investment, to creativity, to tourism, right? And there's a lot of cloud when it comes to, you know, talking about Africa, talking about South Asia, for instance, Latin America, in especially Western markets. Obviously, I come from the perspective of a Western audience, right? And I'm trying to tap into this gap, or at least this is the way the Brighter began. And as a matter of fact, you know, right now we are actually seeing that there's a huge demand for information on these markets beyond the West, right? So we are actually in conversation with a lot of stakeholders across, you know, India, Latin America, and China and Japan, that want to get to know more about the different regions, and also simply you've seen it, you know, with your organizations, the space and the industry is growing very fast, right? So Brighter went from being a magazine per se onto starting building these maps, these innovation maps that you've seen, and a few hundreds maps later, you know, we've become I guess a point of reference for research and for data on the continent, but also across other markets. And what happened in 2019 was we started the construction of what then became the Brighter Intelligence that went live in May 2020. So we're just approaching a year, the first birthday. Yeah, Brighter Intelligence first birthday. And we count thousands of users and thousands of companies and investors and deals on it. Something that is kind of new that we launched last year was you know, this newsletter. We decided to avoid spamming, and what we wanted to do was just providing one piece of information per month, built, you know, based on our data, and also kind of announce all the research that we published, or which is usually free, you know, and that turned into what then became the Brighter Eye, which is you know, our observant newsletter. Something that is important for us when it comes to the storytelling. When we started, we used to say, you know, we're a data-driven storytelling, we're a data storytelling company. And the idea behind this is that not necessarily just for startup, but very much everyone in the market in today is processing huge amount of information every day. And there's a need to streamline this information. There's a need to simplify this information. There's a need to get the sophisticated information, get to the readers, get to the audience in a way that is digestible. And that's how very much the maps were born. And the idea was to, showcase the state of different sectors or different countries, ecosystems, startup ecosystems we're talking, and in a way that would be aesthetically pleasing, right? And visually easy and cognitively, right, understandable. And that's how the map began. I guess I always say that, you know, I think we tapped into a lucky gap in the market. And we saw the demand skyrocket for that type of output. I do believe that the market for infographics has grown since. So we're now, you know, we're now operating in a market that is more mature and has more variation and diversity in the offering. But yeah, we're seeing that there's an increasing demand for this. And that kind of what led then to the digitization of everything that we were doing,
mm-hmm.
and the construction of the writer intelligence, which mm-hmm. is very much the digitization of everything we've been doing.
Yeah. I think maybe let's just talk about the innovation maps for a minute, because it's hard to believe, you know, it's only been 3 years, and I know it's hundreds of maps later. And for me, you know, as a startup founder in Kenya, I think the thing that really took me was, you know, the ease with which you were able to bring a lot of that data into, you know, a visual component. Because previously, all of this information, yes, it might have been available, really hard to access, first of all. But the ease with which and the velocity with which, you know, Writer was able to release this information, you know, opened up the space to, you know, startups in East Africa now knowing what the West is working on, or the South, or even, you know, Francophone markets, so to speak.
Sure. I have a very serendipitous type of approach to this. I think, you know, like as much as Uber and Airbnb, you know, the houses and the cars were there, and the market was also there. And the technological, I guess, advancement were there for people to connect the dots. We very much ended up connecting the dots, right? Mm-hmm. So we, startups were operating, and there's been a growing interest from academia, from public and private investors, from corporates, in understanding the state of things. And when it comes to innovation, you know, startups are the buzz, and they've been the buzz for the past 20 years, mm-hmm. depending on where you look.
Yeah.
And there was a significant gap in aggregators in Africa. There is still in other regions. There are, you know, amazing magazines that are tracking, amazing media, you know, organization that are tracking. We saw the opportunity to provide market insights in a more, I guess, comprehensive way, you know, that wouldn't necessarily be in a media fashion, looking after the breaking news, but like maybe taking a step back, mm-hmm. produce some sort of like slow news and adding the data flavor, meaning trying to extract the opinion part of the news, and then really complementing with data cross-sectional analysis and so on. Started in September 2018.
Mm-hmm.
Writer wasn't even a company when we actually began.
Uh-huh.
And I published, I mean, if you want really the true story of the map, people think mm-hmm. there has been maybe some like grand scheme behind it. Mm-hmm. I was in Nairobi and I was producing some content for what was the magazine.
Mm-hmm.
And I posted this first map of probably like 10 to 15 fintechs that had raised funding in Africa.
Yeah.
And that boomed, that exploded on LinkedIn. And mm-hmm. I didn't have a name. I didn't have a huge network back then. I started the magazine probably 6 months before, mm-hmm. you know, I went on and that led me to sort of like sit down and be like, whoa, you know, that ta-da moment where you're like, maybe, just maybe, I'm sitting on something potentially valuable. And that's how it went, really. The story is, I hired the person who was renting my room in London,
mm-hmm.
right? Back then, I was living in a shared flat in London,
mm-hmm.
and I was actually in East Africa. This is the backstage story.
Yeah.
I was living in East Africa, and I was renting my place in London, and I basically told my designer, look, the person that was renting was like, look, I'm gonna just like half the rent. Mm-hmm. If you help me produce these maps, I'll give you the data, you know, the logos,
uh-huh.
and you do the map.
Mm-hmm.
And that's like, you know, after three or four, she was like, you know what, like, this is too much work.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had to learn it myself.
Yeah.
And that's how, like, basically design, you know, graphic design became a very embedded part of Writer. But yeah, so like, this is a very, like, you know, the rough backstage story of how the maps began. And so, like, if you actually see the first few maps,
yeah,
like probably the first three, four maps, it was agri, mobility, clean tech, yeah. I think, and whatever else, e-commerce. All the other maps have like 10 times the logos, because then it was me having the time to sit down and do this. So yeah, that's how the maps began. But then obviously they became much more sophisticated. We started collaborating with people on the ground.
Yeah.
We started reaching out to as many sort of gatekeepers, right, of the information out there. So the media, the hubs, the investors. And that's how, very much from as a sort of bottom-up process, we became very acquainted with several stakeholders across the space, across the continent, very much from Angola to Somalia, like something that I think was innovative when we went out was the fact that we effectively had been mapping Somalia, we'd been mapping Zimbabwe, we'd been mapping, like, what was it, Angola and Mozambique. Mm-hmm. And no one had done it before, and no one didn't, you know, no one even knew that there used to be startup ecosystem growing in this space. Yeah. And I think, yeah, that has led then to the media picking up our work, local and international, and starting sort of dubbing us as a research organization. And that's how, I guess, the domino effect started. And then, you know, the story, you know, we digitized the process, we expanded the offering.
Yeah.
But the map, you were very much the first thing. Some cynical people might even say that, like, the map are really the added value that we brought in the space. Maybe we're not bringing any more added value. I don't think that's the case. I think we're doing a lot of work.
There's a lot of work.
But yeah, so for instance, what happens now is that perhaps the report that are 50 pages that are not as immediate as the maps, but we're adopting the same process to get the information out there on the Francophone space, on the fintech space, on different environments, because we really want to leverage the fact that we're very acquainted with the space to project the opportunities that are in here.
Awesome. And maybe just then to touch on the report, obviously you've given us the backstory, from the maps. And for me, just, the culmination of the start of the FinTech in Emerging Markets report, it's really an eye-opener because, again, we still don't see quite enough research, looking at the entire African space and, picking out themes just breaking them down. And I went through the report and there's quite a number of things that really excite me. So obviously, the report mentions that in as much as the number of seed rounds are increasing, they're still quite low in terms of value when you look at, when you compare it to other regions like Asia or Latin America. What were some of the responses for the reasons for something like such a statistic from you who conducted the research and had a one-on-one interaction with the respondents?
Sure. I think the caveats or the bottom line that we have to keep in mind for this report, but in general when analyzing this space, is the African technology ecosystems are extremely nascent, first. Second, when we talk about African startup ecosystems, we're talking about 6 to 8 spaces at best, right?
The big ones.
Because you have the usual suspect and then you have the less usual suspect, but still suspect, right? Who are growing and attracting capital and PR very much and branding as spaces, Silicon Savannah and Western Cape and all of that. But in truth, we're talking about very nascent spaces. And the second thing to consider is that the seed stage has been growing. And the amount of in the seed round, and what that means is simply the fact that investors are seeing a higher investability and a lower degree of risk in deploying higher capital than they used to at the same stage, right? Okay. So the understanding down the line that companies would probably have like a higher ability to return investments, and there's more capital availability, and there is more examples that are coming out right? Not necessarily, you know, the Paystack. There are several organizations that are making millions in revenues and hiring, you know, dozens and dozens and dozens of people. So I think that's that what really needs to be considered. Now, there is a technical caveat, mm-hmm. a statistical caveat. But basically, we mentioned that the ticket sizes are larger in Latin America and in Asia. But obviously, that's because, you know, the spaces are more advanced, yeah. right? Are more mature yeah. than many of the spaces across Africa. And then the second is the fact that we've factored in some of the very late stages. So in across Africa, we're starting to see Series B and Series C and yeah. maybe Series D when you're lucky, right? But in India and Latin America, this has been the case for a long time.
Yeah.
Right. And then again, when we're talking about Latin America, we're talking about 3-4 countries at best, right? So you're seeing massive investment in Brazil. We're yeah. seeing massive investment in Mexico. You're seeing start seeing investment in startups in Argentina and in Colombia, mm-hmm. right? But these are all middle-income countries.
Yeah.
Like these are like, if you like to look at, you know, the correlation between GDP per capita and per capita and disposable income and infrastructure and all of that. Like these are countries that obviously present different features compared to the average country across Africa, right? Mm-hmm. Talking about like the mid in the list of, you know, first and GDP per capita is different.
Yeah.
But they present similarities with Kenya, with Egypt. So you can see a degree of regulation that is in favor of ICT and tech companies. You can see infrastructure, you can see disposable income and so on and so forth. So there are different ways that you can read this data point. You can look at it from looking at the glass half empty, saying there's a need for more more seed stake. There's a need for more investment, and there is a need for more investment, right? Mm-hmm. If you just look at, you know, the money that is going into Southeast Asia and the money that is going into African startups, you can already see how far behind the ecosystems are.
Yeah.
And you don't have to cross compare it with California, right?
Yeah, or US, yeah.
Because California is beyond everything. No, but it's beyond the UK, it's beyond France, right? So like juxtaposing these ecosystems is a bit of a fallacy in understanding, you know, how to analyze. But then again, the other way to look at this is that the trend has been very positive. Mm-hmm. Like the trend has been growing, the number of funds available and sort of making capital available are more, like the type of facilities are more diverse, right? They're more diverse, and you can see, you know, there's more diverse facilities, there's more equity, non-equity, there are more grants, more first loss and kind of blended finance opportunities and so on and so forth. And something that is very interesting is that now the founders that have been having a certain degree of success in the past few five to 10 years mm-hmm. are actually like the ambassadors of a new generation of startups, and they're investing and reinvesting and reinvesting into
yeah.
I think the latest of literally I've seen it yesterday was that Kudi and Wallets Africa are yeah. collaborating, yeah. right? And this is I think it's Wallets Africa, yeah. And this is exactly the opportunity that is out there. It's not necessarily for investment, right? For VC,
yeah.
But it's also for like collaborations, like
yeah.
when you have an infrastructure that you can tap into and use that infrastructure as a vehicle for growth and expanding revenues, that's what you want to, you know, what you want to pursue. It's not necessary, and it's also equity free, you know.
Yeah,
you don't
yeah.
have to give away slices of your company.
Maybe.
So this is a massive opportunity that is out there, and I like to look at it this way. Obviously, there's a massive gap, mm-hmm. right? When you look at the other regions, especially if you compare it with Silicon Valley, but it's steady, it's growing, and there's more interest.
Awesome. And I think you've summed it up well, you know, even just looking at the recent partnership between Kudi and Wallets Africa, because what we've seen is sort of the startups with the infrastructure, or, you know, the ones that are building the rails, you know, are the ones that really are way ahead in terms of, you know, raising funds, customers. But then we have now a new generation of, you know, startups that are actually now coming and building on top of that infrastructure. So talk about companies like Flutterwave that have built, you know, that cross-border payment, your pay stacks, but now they are enabling now a new generation of startups that can actually thrive on top of that infrastructure.
100%. I do believe that the opportunity right now lies in partnerships and in trying to unlock different market opportunities that are not necessarily in the investment space. I think the investment space is a consequence of the opening up of these opportunities.
Yeah, awesome. So maybe then in terms of when we look at, you know, just opportunities for growth, obviously the other thing that then comes up is scale. There's been always that raging question about or challenge for most African startups to, first of all, scale beyond their countries and maybe, you know, just have that continental or even go to Latin America or Asia markets. What is it, you know, from your experience that you've seen that has really worked in terms of, you know, just breaking those boundaries of scale for most, for the startups that you have looked at on the continent?
I mean, this is a $1 million question. $1 trillion question, maybe. It really depends on the business model, right? Yeah. It really depends on the company. We have seen, I think technologically speaking, we now have everything we need to let startups and companies scale. Mm-hmm. I am increasingly becoming an advocate for more conducive regulation, right? So the tech piece is there, right? What's missing is the market readily available? Is the market reachable? If the market isn't reachable, why is it the case, right? Why so? Is it because of regulation? Is it because of like political instability? Is it because infrastructural instability or inadequacy and so on and so forth? So I wouldn't have a blueprint for success. I don't think anyone has, to be fair. I do think partnerships and identifying long-term type of solution that would enable you to work for a sustained amount of time in a replicable way and across border is probably like the one way to look at it that way. But again, you know, it's really hard. Now we're trying to find a, you know, one size fits all type of solution. We are seeing a lot of companies that are trying to look at cross border. We all wonder whether, you know, the Africa Continental Free Trade Agreement would actually bear the fruits that it's been, you know, promising, but we're still very early on into this. We're still very early on into interoperability. We're still very early on into seeing massive like cloud companies that are entering the space. So I think there's still huge potential for leaping forward.
Okay, awesome. And I think you've mentioned regulation, and I think personally, regulation is really, you know, a big challenge, especially in some markets across the continent. We've seen, you know, very many issues or run-ins of startups in Nigeria with the regulator. But I did not find, you know, much of on regulation in, you know, in the report. Maybe from your point of view, in terms of regulation, what do you think have been the biggest hurdles, and how then can we start to correct some of those issues that we've had?
So I think cutting out all the, I guess, the darker spots when it comes to like corruption, when it comes to vested interest, when it comes to lobbying, I think obviously we're still talking about you know, economies that have, that lack a degree of infrastructural maturity, mm-hmm. right, and legal framework maturity,
yeah,
to then enable a lot of liberalization in many respects. I think the fact that many of the startups have seen a lot of fraud cases mm-hmm. rising mm-hmm. is an example that can be brought to the table. I'm always in favor of like letting kind of like a having some sort of like market liberalization approach with criteria, right? And no complete liberalization, but there need to be steps that need to be put in place. Mm-hmm. And that need to be, you know, it's the milestone that need to be met for liberalization to happen. For, you know, the people who hold then control of regulation to just sit back and be like, yep, I think there are enough guarantees, enough checks and balances mm-hmm. across the market, you know, for us to, you know, sit back. And again, I'm factoring out the whole like corruption and vested interest part, which I think obviously, you know, plays a role. I don't think I want to get involved in this conversation, but no. Obviously there are several, you know, we're looking at a continent that still struggles a lot with volatility, mm-hmm. right? With currency volatility.
Yeah.
And that's how, like, I know you're keen on talking about cryptos, but like that's also why one of the issues with cryptos is, right?
Yeah.
You know, the rising crypto can destabilize and can stabilize or can anyway like create imbalances on a continent where a lot of the currencies face very high volatility, right? And so this is another example. So it's not just fraud cases and cybersecurity, and but it's also like a more technical and more monetary aspect of this. So there's a need to put checks and balances in place. There's a need for success stories. There's a need for more money to be put on the table for experimentation. But still, I mean, there's still a lot of work to be done. Now, I think one of the most exciting macro phenomena that we're seeing is very much the mobile money and the new banks, right? Because we are seeing like effectively a continent that is being historically cash based, progressively moving towards digital payment.
Yeah.
This is not homogenous across the continent. This is not homogenous across sectors. This is not homogenous across different market segments, but it is happening, right? And the banks who are kind of the beholders, right? The gatekeepers of lots of kind of the market trends, I would say, and the wealth are starting to buy in, right?
Yeah.
We've seen a lot of like, for I think from KCB to FNB, to Nigeria, to Egypt, banks are starting to buy into digital financial services. And this is obviously, it's not to the detriment of anyone, right? It's very much to the, in favor of consumer and would probably to the benefit of the consumers.
Yeah, most definitely. And you've mentioned also about neobanks, and you know this is actually a new trend. I think the other day, Telda from Egypt just raised from Sequoia Capital, and we expect that. And one of the other things that you mentioned on the report is embedded finance to actually be some of the trends that, you know, we are going to see more traction on. So maybe you could just touch briefly on embedded finance and, you know, how you see it being a driver of fintech across different fields.
Sure. I mean, starting from neobank, I guess it's a phenomenon that is very much global. There's a trend toward letting the consumer be in power of their wealth, and so letting them feel like there is more control over their money than there would be, you know, than there used to be, right? In a kind of more peer-to-peer kind of way.
Yeah.
Even though like it's hardly ever pure peer-to-peer, because obviously you go through a machine right? You always go through a bank, and then, but I guess there's an element of deregulation, trust, and that is built in that process. When it comes to embedded finance, obviously, I would say finance is simply the word that underpins, I guess, the whole paradigm, the whole framework that allows you and I to transact.
Right? Yeah.
And as being doctors, as being truck drivers, as being insurers, as being farmers, there needs to be an element of, you know, the ability for us to transact, right? And financial technology has basically been putting that element in the hand of entrepreneurs and, you know, companies that are developing solutions in this specific sector. Mm-hmm. And that's how, like, we're seeing, I guess, you know, a proportional growth in that sector as a proxy for growth for many other, many other sectors. Because effectively, the rise of e-commerce has been enabled by a strengthening in the trust infrastructure in digital, in the growth in cybersecurity, the growth in financial infrastructure that allows you and I to exchange money or exchange a good and pay for it remotely without having even, you know, ever even met.
Right?
And then, of course, there's a whole infrastructure around, you know, getting carrots from, I don't know, from Kisumu to Nairobi, or getting an insurance package paid, or getting whatever, like a good package from a warehouse to your house.
Yeah.
But what is it really enabling it, right? There's a better KYC that isn't, you know, that is put in place when you make your account, and when the moment you make your account, there's a credit check, right? There's a reliability check, there's a security check. All of these are now, they probably, we forget, or like the average consumer forgets about it, but there's a whole infrastructure to be put in place that includes regulation, that includes technological components that enable that safe transaction to happen, and so on and so forth. So I think, you know, all this very confusing rambling to say that financial technology often underpins many of other sectors. And something we've seen, for instance, in lending, something very exciting, I think, has been the growth in lending from companies that are, for instance, providing supply chain management platforms, right? These can go from Kobo to whatever, like CircleWatch and many others alike. And what happens is these companies are now collecting so much information to create a financial history of the people that then populate the databases, right? Their fleet and so on, to then have a first first row position to be able to say, Eric is, or Dario is eligible for an insurance package or a repayment plan, right? Yeah. So Dario can probably buy a better wheel, so can buy more product, can buy this and that, right? Yeah. And this is enabled by the fact that they're better for financial history, which is in turn enabled by the fact that technology is able to store information about you, even if you don't have a bank account, right? Mm-hmm. One of the findings, for instance, for this report, which has been very much a validation, right, of what happens. Like, this is something we know, but we've seen the data, so right, we've been very happy to be able to finally get out there with some solid information, is that most of the respondents said that their company, their platform can be accessed without a desktop or without a smartphone or without internet connection, meaning expanding to probably like the bottom of the income sort of band, right? And also that users don't necessarily need to read like extensive documentations to access these apps, or finally have a bank account, right? And this is an increase in accessibility of a lot of services that, you know, in turn trickles down to the availability of credit, and the availability of credit, the ability to buy more produce or storage or goods, and then so on and so forth, right? That's how, like, in this sense, fintech is playing very much technology and the whole auxiliary technology around the transaction. So the KYC and the credit scoring and the cybersecurity are really being the element zero, right? Mm-hmm. In this process.
Awesome. And I think it's very important that you're talking about, you know, just the ecosystem and how fintech and basically financial services are embedded in essence in, you know, different sectors of the economy. So then, speaking of ecosystems again, the African continent is huge, and, you know, in as much as there is funding that comes in, there's been a lot of sort of complaints, and for a good reason, because we really hadn't seen much information, I think, from where I sit as well, on the Francophone regions. And you recently put out a report on the Francophone market, which is quite interesting. Quite a number of, you know, budding startups coming up. From that report, you know, what have been, you know, the main learnings for you from that report in terms of that market, and what can we expect from it?
Something that I'm doing is actually showcasing the rising interest in this region, which still remains, I guess, out of range for several investors and entrepreneurs due to, obviously, first the French language. Mm-hmm. Although supposedly everyone, like not everyone, should speak English, but surely, like, English remains the, I guess, one of the most lingua franca of the world. There's a practical gap in accessibility to the information about what happens in this country, because the primary language isn't English, one of the primary. And sometimes it's not even French, obviously, but let's say they're characterized by a legacy of a French-speaking language. And there are a few elements that I've been excited about. One is the interest from East African companies in settling in countries like Senegal or Cote d'Ivoire as bases to expand then across the region. Yeah. We're seeing, like, top of my mind, I think Twiga, that, you know, mentioned it. I don't even know if Twiga actually went on to expand to actually operations to Francophone Africa. But Twiga was one of the first one raising cash and announcing expansion to Cote d'Ivoire.
Yeah.
But then we've seen Circle Watch, and we've seen Sendy also expanding to the region by way of setting, I guess, a base in that region. But also other companies, like Gebeya is an Ethiopian company that set up in Senegal doing talent. And why? Because like Francophone Africa actually offers quite high degree of talent, especially Senegal being like a relatively stable ICT hub for the region. Also offers a lot of ties with Europe, especially Western Europe.
Yeah.
And it's been a high, like, the diaspora is very active, and it's very high across Europe, and so there are a few countries that, you know, have been growing off the radar, but that are offering actually a lot of opportunity. Another interesting aspect is obviously the fact that a lot of the challenges are similar, you know, regardless of the fact that we're talking about different environments, different regions, there are similar aspects that need to be tapped into, right? The lack of credit, right? The need for, like, a better logistical infrastructure, the need for more investment into small holding farmers. Like, we are seeing very, especially in Cote d'Ivoire, where, like, the cocoa production is so dominant and so important in the region, right? This is Ghana who's doing, Ghana is taking the first few steps in trying to own the supply chain for cocoa. You know, there are so many steps that are yet to be taken in agriculture in Francophone Africa. So by shedding light on what happens across this region, we're trying to really see if we can move the needle, right? To drive some more attention. And we've really been reaching out to most of the investors that we know, for some, actually all the investors that we know, but hopefully most of the investors that are that are active in the space, public and private, and corporates and so on, to really say, you know, this is what is happening, and we'd like you to just to take note of what is happening across this market.
Awesome.
And finally, I guess one of the interesting bits is the rise in public and private funding facilities for Francophone Africa. So it's not just the Proparco and AFD and, you know, the Canadian and the FDB, but there are also lots of corporates that are looking into Francophone Africa. And there are also a lot of like the big guns that are looking into Francophone Africa. So you have Hitch, which is one of the leading taxi companies in France that has expanded across North and West Francophone Africa. You have Bolt, you have Uber. Obviously, you have Jumia, which has been fairly active. You've seen Glovo. Glovo is massive in Côte d'Ivoire. Like if you walk around Abidjan, you can see, at least this was the case until like a year ago. I went to Abidjan a few times, and you can see like these big names, you know, and riders across the street. So I'm very bullish on Francophone Africa. I think there's more interest from local and international players. We are yet to see like significant numbers of success stories from the region.
Yeah.
But I know, for instance, there are two of the companies that are raising in order of millions recently, and they will be announcing, I think, soon. You know, this is the, or other companies that have been raising quite a lot, like Daystar Power, and then have started operation from the FNAF.
Yeah, awesome. And obviously, you've mentioned you're very bullish about Francophone Africa. My final question as we come to the end of the podcast is, you know, what are the themes that you're looking forward to most on the fintech space in Africa as a whole, you know, from an innovation and startup point of view, and also now from an investment or funding point of view?
Sure. So obviously, I think with the spree of very large deals that we've seen in fintech, we are seeing now the real players in the startup space globally entering the conversation. So, you know, I don't want to mention necessarily Tiger Global because now it's on everyone's mouth, but there are quite significant late stage investors and corporates that are entering the market and targeting fintech as their first sector of interest. But I think something that I'm really bullish and interested in is the fact that there's growth in data availability. And I'm not talking about necessarily brighter type of data, corporate data. I'm really talking about consumer type of data, right? Commodities, prices, and so on. Companies like Grow Intelligence, but many other companies are doing consumer good type of data, are actually contributing to the growth of products such as credit scoring, KYC, insurtech, right? And I think these will lead to substantial growth in these spaces, because the more information available there is for collateral, for, you know, drafting comparables and so on, the more we'll see auxiliary and kind of subsidiary sectors grow all across the board.
Yeah, awesome. But then now, for a more personal question, then what should we expect from Brighter? You know, it's been an amazing 2.5 years. What the future hold?
Yeah. So Brighter has been doing quite a lot of work in emerging markets right now.
Yeah.
What we're really focusing on is trying to spotlight, you know, cross-regional opportunities. No company has started from Africa, and at least no company that I know has done the work that we're doing from Africa out towards emerging markets. Usually what we're seeing is, and a lot of our clients actually, you know, start from global and then go into Africa.
Yeah.
And then we're reversing this process because we really want to tap into the opportunity that, you know, the continent has to offer to other similar markets. So India, Latin America, Middle East, and then obviously create cross opportunities. So a lot of emerging markets work. We've been investing significantly into our tool, into the Brighter Intelligence. So you'll see significant changes a lot of changes are in the back end, so you cannot really see. But you know, for people that operate the platform and for you know, the people that are using it, there's quite a lot of changes. So I guess these are the two. I guess product and the emerging markets focus are the two, and I guess a whole lot of reports that we're releasing this year.
Awesome. Yeah, we are looking forward to that. And thank you very much, Dario, for joining us today. And obviously, waiting to see, you know, the brighter intelligence features that you're talking about, because as I mentioned initially, we actually also use that tool, you know, to just keep a track on the various startups and, you know, what's going on in the African space.
Super.